Right, good morning. Good morning and welcome to Sunday View. It is Sunday, December 3rd, 2017. Hope you're well. Hope you've had a good weekend. It's not a bad day in Greater Manchester. Well, very close to the city centre. In South Manchester, it's not a bad day. It started off pretty bright. It's not as chilly as it's been. I'm delighted to be with you. For the next hour or thereabouts, we'll take a look at the big stories in today's broadsheet and tabloid national newspapers. We'll look at one or two stories inside those newspapers as well. And I look forward to hearing from you on Twitter during that time. You can tweet at Richie Allen Show. That's at Richie Allen Show on Twitter. Sunday View is, as always, brought to you in association with DavidIke.com. Keep it open. A lot of very interesting stories and news on DavidIke.com today, as always. Let's do it then. Let's do Sunday View.
For critical information ignored by the mainstream media, log on to DavidIke.com/headlines now.
Marvellous. You can email me, but it's better to tweet me. At Richie Allen Show on Twitter, it's probably best to tweet me because I get those tweets much quicker. This is your Sunday View. Nothing like it on Sunday morning in association with DavidIke.com or live on Fab Radio 2.
Broadcasting live from the great city of Manchester, England. This is the Richie Allen Show on DavidIke.com.
Loads, as usual, to talk about. Loads to talk about. So we'll jump straight in there then. You might have seen some of the Sunday broadsheets this morning. A lot of very interesting stories about Brexit. But I was saying to David in a brief email exchange this morning, I know there's a bit of Brexit fatigue. I'm well aware of it. So we're not going to dwell an awful lot on the UK leaving the European Union this morning. We'll do a little bit because there is some interesting stuff in the news. But there's also some other very interesting stories that we want to have a look at because we've been covering on the programme going back to the beginning of the programme back in 2014. Nice to be with you. As always, I just mentioned it, but I'll mention it again. Take part by tweeting to at Richie Allen Show. We're live on TuneIn Radio, Fab Radio 2 in Manchester, and DavidIke.com as well. There's a fascinating video cast put out by David about the attacks on him and others by these Zionist groups like the Campaign Against Anti-Semitism and also the Northwest Friends of Israel. It's called Coalition of the Gutless and it's on David's YouTube channel now. I recommend you take a look at it. It's a very detailed analysis of how these groups operate and how, even though they are tiny in terms of their number, you know, these organisations, they have probably half a dozen people involved with them. He analyses how they have managed to be successful. Not successful, because I don't think they have or will be successful in the long term, but how they've managed to cause annoyance and nuisance for people. Great analysis. I recommend you check that out. 3 minutes past 11 now in the UK as we do this live. I say that because by the time you hear this on the west coast of the US podcast later on, things develop, things evolve, things move on. But we're looking at the front pages anyway of the UK national newspapers. The Sunday Observer will start with today. And this is a big story and it's one that is covered in pretty much all the broadsheets and it is being discussed on UK mid-morning media right now. The headline on the Sunday Observer is May's social mobility czar quits with attack on fairness failure. I'll read you some of the Observer's article. It reads, Theresa May was plunged into a new crisis on Saturday night after the government's social mobility advisor revealed he and his team were quitting, warning that the Prime Minister was failing in her pledge to build a fairer Britain. In what has been described as a major blow to number 10, Alan Milburn, the former Labour Cabinet Minister who chairs the government's Social Mobility Commission, said that he and all three of his fellow commissioners were walking out, including a leading Conservative, Gillian Shepherd. The move would be seen as a direct challenge to May's vow in Downing Street to place fairness and social justice at the heart of her premiership. In his resignation letter, which has been seen by the Observer, Milburn warns that dealing with Brexit means the government does not seem to have the necessary bandwidth to ensure the rhetoric of healing social division is matched with the reality. And they quote Milburn, "I have little hope of the current government making the progress I believe is necessary to bring about a fairer Britain. It seems unable to commit to the future of the Commission as an independent body or to give due priority to the social mobility challenge facing our nation." And the Observer writes, "The resignations come with the Prime Minister already under pressure as she faces crunch Brexit talks and questions over the future of her most senior minister, Damien Green." And the Green thing, of course, Damien Green, is all about the allegations that a computer from his office had a lot of porn on it. A wheelbarrow load of porn, apparently. Whether Green was using that computer or not, I have no idea. But it's all over the place and has been for the last 10 days or so. Now, fairness and social justice, dear listener, in my opinion, your opinion, of course, is welcome too. Please tweet it to me. Fairness and social justice is a load of old tosh anyway. These programmes, you hear Prime Ministers year in, year out, decade in, decade out, talking about fairness and social mobility. Those programmes have to exist as part of creating the illusion for the great unwashed, us, that these people are there for our benefit. They have to have these bullshit programmes, which are not meant to go anywhere. But if those programmes didn't exist, the veil of, you know, the house of cards would begin to collapse, because people would see more clearly than ever that these people are not working for us. Right? Anyway, the man himself, Alan Milburn, spoke with Andrew Marr today. Now, one thing that's very important to remember, and this is, I often rant against journalism standards or the lack of standards in this country. Nowhere in the, let's call them the progressive media today, is the fact that Milburn's time as the government czar on social mobility was coming to an end, and he had been told that it wasn't being renewed. So think about that. And this criticism comes on the back of that, right? So maybe it's revenge. Maybe Milburn was told, well, we're not going to be renewing your tenure as the fairness and social justice czar. Maybe Milburn decided, well, I'm going to resign before that and throw these grenades into the public domain and blame Brexit. Maybe. But there's no mention of the fact that Milburn had been told he wouldn't be kept on. This is gutter journalism. Anyway, Andrew Marr, to his credit, did put that question to Milburn. He said, in light of the fact that you were going anyway, why choose now to quit? Right? You won't hear Andrew Marr's question in this clip, but he did say that. And it's available on the BBC iPlayer. To be fair to Marr, he said, you were going anyway, so why do it now before your time reached its conclusion? People will say it's all about revenge.
For the last 10 years or so, in various social mobility roles, I've served a Labour Prime Minister, a Coalition Prime Minister, and now a Conservative one. I've done so because I care deeply about the issue and I believe that it matters profoundly to the country. I've reached the conclusion, sadly, that with the current government, there is little, if any, hope of progress being made towards the fairer Britain that the Prime Minister has talked about. The government, probably for understandable reasons, is focused on Brexit and seems to lack the bandwidth to be able to translate the rhetoric of healing social division and promoting social justice into reality. So I'm afraid I've reached the conclusion that there's only so long that you can go on pushing water uphill.
These are areas of desperate deprivation around the country where people are stuck and angry. Theresa May has only had 18 months as Prime Minister. She came in saying that she would correct burning injustices. Are you saying that she is simply unable to do that?
No, look, the Prime Minister, I've got no doubt, has a personal commitment to social justice. She has championed quite unfashionable causes in her time, modern slavery, for example. But what is lacking here is meaningful political action to translate very good words into deeds. In the end, what counts in politics is not what you talk about, it's what you do. And I'm afraid the divisions in Britain are becoming wider. They're becoming wider economically, socially and geographically.
Amazing that his old friend, Tony Blair, came to power in 1997 with a landslide general election victory in this country, promising that there would be an end to the status quo of money going uphill and shit coming downhill to the rest of us. Blair promised it. Everybody believed it. I was a young-ish 22, 23-year-old producer and presenter in Ireland, and I believed it as well. But the rate of inequality in terms of income and fairness between those in privileged positions in society and everybody else accelerated under Tony Blair at a rate of knots, which of course, if he really wanted to, Andrew Marr could have gotten into, but he didn't. Look, to be fair to Marr, he puts it to him again. This is revenge. Your department was told that you were going to be replaced. This is all about revenge, and because you're a Remoaner, right, Alan?
Yes, of course, people will say that sort of thing, but frankly, it's a bit pathetic. I've worked for Labour, Coalition, Conservative Prime...
Oh, we don't care who you looked for, and people can say it's pathetic if they want, but the timing is incredible, really, isn't it? But of course, he's not going to be pressed on it.
Conservative Prime Ministers, the Commission is cross-party, it's non-partisan, it's entirely independent. We've tried to change the terms of the political debate in the country, and I think that we have. What is needed, however, is really clear leadership to translate perfectly good words into actions that will make a difference.
And the Prime Minister is not providing that leadership?
At the moment, not.
Can I ask you about Jeremy Corbyn, another leader? Because here is somebody who has come up with much stronger proposals in some of these areas than the Blair years offered us. He has got very strong proposals on spending money on wages, on social mobility, on education, on welfare. Isn't he the answer?
I don't think he is the answer, personally. I think at the moment our politics are deeply polarised. I think they're polarised between, on the one hand, the vision of a more nationalist Britain, with Brexit taking place, and on the other hand, you've got a vision of a rather statist Britain under Mr. Corbyn.
You sound a little bit like a centrist dad at this point. Are you about to launch the Centrist Dad's Party?
Absolutely not.
A centrist dad's party with warmongering murderer Tony Blair in charge and Peter Mandelson in the shadows and Alistair Campbell. It might just happen. You never know. Now, Aisha Azarika is a comedian, allegedly. A comedienne, I should say. And was a former senior advisor to the Labour Party. She's a Remoaner. Here she is on blaming Brexit for worsening social mobility. This is hilarious. Of all the things that those people who want to stop Brexit have come up with, all the pathetic reasons, this has got to be scraping the barrel. People are worse off because all of the government's attention is on Brexit is pathetic. Yet these people are saying it today and it's going unchallenged.
We've all remembered, you know, the words on the steps of Downing Street about how she wanted to put social justice at the heart of her premiership. And any political party, whatever hue, should have social mobility at its heart. At a very basic level, this is you wanting your children to get on in life. This is wanting to make sure that people have a fair crack of the whip. And Britain is still a very unequal society. Your life chances are actually set by the time you're about 2.5, so deep is quite a lot of the inequality. And I think what's interesting about what Alan Milburn has said is that he says that the government does not have the necessary bandwidth to deal with these issues because of Brexit. Brexit has paralysed this country, and there are huge issues in terms of, you know, if you're looking at social mobility, you've got to be looking at living standards, you've got to look at education, and they are things which are basically being ignored at the moment by this government. So this is very, very damaging for Theresa May and her government.
Yeah, we'll leave Brexit alone for a while. I told you we wouldn't spend too much time on it this morning, but it's ridiculous. It's ridiculous to suggest that the government is failing to tackle inequality and social justice because they're focusing on Brexit. They're failing to tackle social inequality, the rich-poor gap widening, things getting more difficult for people on the ground. They're failing to do that because they never had any fucking intention of doing anything about that. This is one of those things when you become Prime Minister of any country, it's one of those things you have to say. It's on the checklist of fooling the people. Fooling all of the people all of the time. It's on the checklist. How do we fool these people that this is a real democracy and we're actually working for them? How do we do that? Number one, we'll put these programmes in. We will announce a new Tsar to bring about social justice and mobility. Check, lovely. We'll say that we're committed to making it a fairer society. Check, number two. It's all fucking bullshit. It's garbage. I've been covering politics nationally for radio locally for 20 years now. And every political leader in every country in the world comes to power promising to halt the inequality divide because it's on the checklist. No intentions of it, of course, because the people who put them in power are hell-bent on that gap widening and widening and widening. Right? Right. Also on the front page of The Observer, this is interesting, but we won't dwell on it. Labour faces subversion by momentum and the far left's Roy Hattersley. Now, I've no time for Roy Hattersley or any other politician, but it's a very interesting article about this pressure group Momentum, which you might remember was launched only a couple of weeks after Jeremy Corbyn won the Labour leadership in 2015. It's a Gestapo type group. It really is. I've been looking very closely at some of the mouthpieces for Momentum and some of the people who run Momentum. And this is a group that is basically terrorising Labour Party supporters and would-be Labour Party candidates, not just nationally but locally as well, terrorising them in terms of this progressive group is saying you must have opinions on these on these issues, on every issue that align with the progressive Frankfurt School, multicultural, all the stuff that we talk about. You must have these opinions. If you don't have them, you will be labelled as a bigot and you won't be able to run for Labour councillor, Labour mayor, or for Labour MP, because we'll prevent that happening. That's who this group are, right? It's incredible, really, when you look deep into who they are and what they're doing. Now, Hattersley says that Momentum is basically attempting to purge the Labour Party of anybody who doesn't support Jeremy Corbyn enough. And there's a story about Watford and how councillors in Watford were ousted in selection contests because, or they were told to stand down because of the fact that they don't align with every single policy, with every single opinion of Corbyn's, or in reality, of the people around Corbyn, what have been called the Revolutionary Guard. A lot of Labour supporters, I suppose, won't like listening to this, but I couldn't care less. We don't support politics. We don't support any party. We certainly don't endorse any man or woman in politics. Never have done, never will. Momentum says that it is set up to build on the energy and enthusiasm from the Jeremy Corbyn for Labour leader campaign to increase participatory democracy, solidarity and grassroots power and help Labour become the transformative governing party of the 21st century. That's what they say. They've been called the far left, but they're not really. They're anti-democratic, progressive. They're climate hoax pushers, pro-European Union, pro this gender neutrality garbage, pro-social justice, the Marxist promoters of multiculturalism. They seek to silence and remove anybody who disagrees with them. And I have nothing in common with Roy Hattersley, but he's right. That's the reality of what is behind the Jeremy Corbyn movement and the Jeremy Corbyn push for the election victory that it's looking more and more likely he will get sometime next year. That's who these people are. It's why Corbyn has basically reneged on or flip-flopped on everything that he ever stood for in his 3.5, 4 decades as a backbencher. That's the reality. When I say mouthpieces for Momentum, think Owen Jones. He's a poster boy for this group, this Stasi-type group, which are infiltrating the sometimes decades-old members of the Labour Party and ostracising them and blacklisting them because they might have questions about multiculturalism, they might have questions about immigration, they might have questions about gay marriage, they might have questions about adoption, whatever. They're blacklisted. That's who this Momentum is. Apparently, they have 31,000 members, which is quite staggering, really. But that's your so-called democracy in this country. That's your opposition. Your opposition to the tyranny of the Conservative Party is another tyranny in waiting. A bunch of lunatic progressives who will not tolerate anybody and will seek to destroy anybody who doesn't align themselves with their very, very narrow view of society and of the world. Ain't it wonderful, democracy? Anyway, let's have a look at the Sunday Times, 21 minutes past 11. Headline, May betrays families that voted for Brexit. That's the headline. Now, this is the story that we just heard, that the Social Mobility Commission believes that the government's focus on Brexit means it's unable to tackle social mobility problems. Now, the Sunday Times alleges that this means that ministers are ultimately abandoning the voters who had backed Brexit. The Sunday Express leads with the royal engagement. Not so much of that around today. You would have thought on the Sunday after the engagement was announced that the papers would be full of it. Not as much as you would have thought. The headline is Meghan's wedding present. The ridiculous allegation is that the economy will receive a boost to the tune of 500 million quid, but also that the special relationship with the United States will get a boost. The Sunday Telegraph, front page. Now, this is a Brexit story. It's the last Brexit story we'll do this morning, but it's an important one. It says, Tories at war over European judges. That's the front page headline on the Sunday Telegraph. The story reads that Theresa May is heading towards a version of Brexit that effectively fails to withdraw Britain from the European Union. Now, we've been saying for a long time that the UK is not leaving the European Union. At least not properly leaving the European Union. It's either not leaving at all, or there'll be some watered down version of Brexit which will be in name only. Now, Sir Richard Aikins, who was a Court of Appeal judge until 2015, has told Theresa May that any proposed compromise on oversight by the European Court of Justice was dangerous and that it would be effectively reversing the result of the 2016 referendum. Ian Duncan Smith wrote an article for the Sunday Telegraph today. He agrees with the judge and he says that the move could lead to European judges overseeing trade disputes. Theresa May is facing mounting protests over the plans from within her government, with Michael Gove and Boris Johnson understood to be among those opposing the proposed offer to Brussels. So what is the offer? Well, the offer is that on citizens' rights, the UK would offer Brussels an arrangement in which British judges could refer specific cases relating to European Union citizens to the European Court of Justice for a binding interpretation. This is not going down well. Such cases would centre on points of law on which there had not already been clear rulings from the court. But, and this is what I think, this could lead ultimately to this broadening out so that the European Court of Justice would rule on other issues, including things like trade. And Ian Duncan Smith and others are saying there is a massive question of where this would ultimately end. And if you do have a situation where the European Court of Justice has involvement or influence on British court decisions and British court hearings, of course you're not really leaving the European Union, are you? Eh? Jacob Rees-Mogg, you've heard before, you've heard a lot on television recently. He's a Conservative. He was also on the BBC news programmes today. He was on with Andrew Marr today on this very issue, saying that leaving must mean leaving, But he also talks about the European Court of Justice. But first of all, the news last week that the UK will hand £50 billion to Brussels as part of the divorce settlement. That 50 billion quid, ransom money effectively, because they're giving them the money so that the EU will stop being stubborn and move on to talks, which is outrageous. Here's Jacob Rees-Mogg.
But it's very important that we don't hand over a great deal of money unless we have an agreement. The risk is that we pay the money from the day we leave, and that reduces our negotiating clout to get the trade deal finalised if it hasn't been done before the 29th of March 2019, and that seems an obvious point.
And you want the transition period, which is basically there to help British business, to mean that we can carry on, we can actually start to do free trade deals with the rest of the world, and that we have no European Court of Justice jurisdiction whatsoever during those 2 years?
Well, the question is whether we remain in the European Union for an extra period to have the transition, or whether we've left on the 29th of March 2019. If we remain under the European Court of Justice and we're making large obligatory payments to the EU budget, there is no difference on the 30th of March and the 29th of March, and we will have stayed in the European Union. So it's a question of whether we've actually left in 2019 or are de facto remaining in the European Union, but without any votes or without a judge or without any of the current protections that we have, poor though they are.
Can I be clear, under your plan, as it were, because there's also no freedom of movement after March 2019, in effect, there is no transitional period at all. It's happened. March 2019, no freedom of movement, no ECJ, no money, we're out and that's it.
You describe it beautifully. We will actually have left in March 2019.
So there isn't
the
a transition period.
The Prime Minister used to refer carefully... Just a moment. The Prime Minister used to refer very carefully to an implementation period. And that meant that we had left in 2019, but implementing the consequences of leaving. Now everyone seems to be talking about transition, which means transitioning from in the European Union to out of the European Union. And that delays our departure for 2 years. And it was very interesting listening to Mr. Milburn earlier, pointing out that the poorest areas of the country voted to leave. We need to deliver the benefits of leaving to the poorest in our nation, because otherwise they will feel deeply let down, and that includes dealing with freedom of movement, and it includes getting free trade deals so that we can lower the cost of food, clothing and footwear.
Yeah, leave means leave. No transition, no deal that keeps us half in, but I don't believe it's going to happen. Neither does it seem Nigel Farage believes it's going to happen. Former UKIP leader, of course, and the person most responsible for the referendum last year, was on the BBC commenting on the 50 billion, and Farage seems to think we're going to end up with some deal that keeps us half in the European Union.
Eurosceptics demand no more bowing to the EU. It's quite interesting that the government was elected as a pro-Brexit government, yet they find themselves increasingly moving away from mainstream Eurosceptic opinion in this country. For example, agreeing to pay up to 50 billion sterling as a separation bill from the European Union. I mean, that is something supported by only about 10% of the entire population.
Can I ask you about what you think about that? Because a lot of people would say it's a lot of money, even over many, many years, but if we get a really good trade deal as a result of that, it might economically, in the end, be worth it.
I don't think a tariff-free access deal to the European single market is worth 50 billion sterling. Absolutely not. It's way too much money. The problem with all of this is that the EU are being very unreasonable. At every step of this, they appear like bully boys. And to see Donald Tusk in Dublin the other day saying to the Irish, you can veto everything, there's a feeling that we're not dealing with reasonable people. There's also a feeling that we're probably, under Theresa May, at the end of March 2019, going to leave the European Union in name, but still be stuck part of the single market. And goodness knows what gets agreed on Ireland.
Absolutely right, Nigel Farage, absolutely right. Let's go to some of your Twitter comments, then we'll take a break and then we'll leave Brexit alone for today. Deborah tweets, if we calculate how much revenue the EU have crushed from our fishing, mining and manufacturing industries and take that figure off the 50 billion, then they owe us, says Deborah. That's an excellent point. Deborah, 100% right. Pat Garrett tweets, Pat, how are you? Hi, Richie. I remember a previous Prime Minister, John Major, talking about wealth cascading down the generations. What he neglected to say was he wasn't talking about the working class. Regards from Pat. You're absolutely right Pat. Thank you very much for that. Kim Erswell with a very funny comment on Twitter. How you doing, Kim? If it can be shown, Richie, that Damien Green had ordered a lot of Kleenex for his own personal use, the porn allegations would be a slam dunk for me. Mark Richards tweets, I heard that they left, they being Alan Milburn and his team, because they heard they were being replaced. Well, that's the allegation, you see. Absolutely right. Good morning to Peter. Good morning to Helen Crosby. Good morning, Helen. Nice to know you're listening this Sunday. This is Sunday View, brought to you in association with davidicke.com. We're live on Fab Radio 2 and TuneIn Radio as well. Got some really interesting stuff coming up after the break that is, thankfully for you, I think, non-Brexit related. Good morning, John Brown, and good morning to Jackie in Oz. Good morning, Jackie. I hope you're well. Very quick break. Back with plenty more on Sunday View.
Is your mind full of ideas, yet you struggle to put them down on paper? Characters with no home, unfinished concepts that you always wanted to finalise, yet lacked knowledge and drive to complete? The Creative Writing Course from Creative Imaginings may be the long-awaited answer. Designed to help you finish your masterpiece with better language techniques, detailed study of the character, plotted suspense chain, and valuable information to get published. Don't delay your creation. Complete your 100% online course at www.creativeimaginings.com.au.
Introducing the H2O app, a powerful water structuring application that programs vibrational energies into water through the use of different sound frequencies. Once programmed, the use of water for drinking, cooking, bathing. Give it to your friends and colleagues or spread it around the garden. The list goes on. It's not just water that the app can be used for either. It's great for programming crystals too. The H2O app is free to download and is available on both Android and Apple platforms. For further information, go to h2oapp.online.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
There's a place high in the mountains of Spain, a sanctuary where souls gather from all around the globe to learn about themselves and experience powerful changes in the way we see our world. They become awakened to their gifts and their power to heal others. Become part of this ever-growing worldwide family of unique, pure energy healing practitioners. Discover how amazing you truly are. Go to www.markbajerski.com. It could just change your life forever.
Book launches are often hyped. Then you open the first page and... But David Icke's new book, Everything You Need to Know But Have Never Been Told, really will astonish you. Thought-provoking and controversial, it's available now. So read a real page-turner. Everything You Need to Know But Have Never Been Told by former footballer and presenter David Icke. Available exclusively at davidicke.com.
Richie Allen.
Welcome back. Sunday View in association with davidicke.com is live right now on Fab Radio 2, TuneIn Radio and davidicke.com. Here's an interesting story now that's in the news this morning. It's on the front page of the Sunday Telegraph as well as that story about the European Court of Justice. Here's the headline. 3,000 therapists sent into our classrooms. Children will be offered counselling in the classroom in a bid to tackle a mental health crisis among British youth under new government plans. Around 3,000 health professionals will be trained to counsel anxious pupils in a bid to tackle soaring levels of mental distress and self-harm, with every school also asked to have a designated teacher in charge of mental health. The proposals in a government green paper on children and young people's mental health, backed with £300 million, will also see a four-week waiting time limit piloted. The plans aim to tackle the scandal of troubled children, including those who are suicidal, facing long waits for psychiatrists, with some waiting as long as 18 months for help. It follows warning of an epidemic of anxiety among Britain's young, with a 70% rise in self-harm among teenage girls in 3 years. Jesus Christ. 70% rise in self-harm among teen girls in 3 years. That's amazing, that. Anyway, the story goes on. Experts say the internet is heaping pressures on children. You think? With social media fueling a sense of inadequacy, dissatisfaction with appearance, and leaving some with no respite from bullying. The strategy, which will be published tomorrow, puts the onus on schools to do more to respond to early signs of mental distress and prevent children developing long-lasting problems. Under the proposals, a new profession of healthcare professionals called well-being practitioners will be trained to deliver courses of therapy in schools, with psychology graduates among those likely to be targeted for the new roles. Here's Justine Greening, she's the UK's Education Secretary, speaking on the Andrew Marr Show today. Have a very careful listen, to what she says.
If I'm a parent with a child at school who has mental health issues, or I'm a child at school who has mental health issues, what will I notice changing?
Well, first of all, it's fair to say there's a huge amount of work that schools already do, but what you'll see change is more structure in those relationships and more provision. First of all, a senior designated lead in every school on mental health, so young people really knowing where they can go to get help. But also for that person in the school who's taking that lead role, more support from mental health support teams.
So more clarity, really. This is where you go.
Well, also more support. So more support that they can draw down on when they want to take preventative action to help young people early. And of course, more training in schools as part of that for those people playing a lead role.
Whoa! Hang on a second. What was that bit about taking preventative measures in schools? Listen again.
So more support that they can draw down on when they want to take preventative action to help young people early.
Have a listen.
So more support that they can draw down on when they want to take preventative action to help young people early.
Preventative action when schools and the designated teacher who's the designated well-being, whatever the hell they call it. What do they call it? Let me scroll up there. What was it? Well-being. What do they call them again? Let me scroll back up there. Let's see. They called them well-being what? It wasn't well-being practitioners. I think it might have been. Was it well-being practitioners? Let's have a look. Yes, well-being practitioners. With teachers, of course, being designated as well. Each school having teachers designated as a well-being practitioners. Who will get to decide when preventative measures need to be taken to prevent a child becoming depressed or becoming suicidal or beginning to self-harm? This is incredibly, incredibly sick and sinister. It's Orwellian in the extreme. Nowhere has the parents been mentioned in any of this? Have the parents been consulted about this? I mean, where I come from, the job of schools, well, it used to be, not anymore, we'll talk more about that in a minute. The job of schools was to teach children the basics, to read, to write, to do basic equations. That was their job. Surely the responsibility of caring for the well-being of children lies with their parents, lies with their family. I wonder what powers will these therapists have, these 3,000 therapists that they've sent into schools. What preventative measures will they be able to take? For example, will they have within their remit the right to contact social services and say that they believe that the child is undergoing stress at home? Maybe there are arguments, as we heard last week, arguments between the child's parents, and it's causing anxiety and unease in the child. Therefore, we need to step in and we need to take preventative action. This is sick. And it's utterly wrong. And all the virtue signalers were out in force today on breakfast television saying it's a great thing because it's about protecting children. It isn't. It's about programming children not to think independently. They are on the lookout for children who reject the ridiculous fucking system, the education system, life itself. Kids who might be upset because of the madness and the lunacy of this world, maybe, who might be inclined to ask questions about it, or might be inclined to take a different path. That's what's going on here. Of course, living online is screwing children up. We've talked a lot about that. That's deliberate. That's not a side effect of being online. It was always intended to be so. But what they're doing in UK schools is the Scottish named person thing by the back door. Here are these professionals. They are going to be looking after the emotional well-being of your child, whether you like it or not. Schools have no business to be in the business of providing psychological or mental health services for children, let alone be deciding when there needs to be an intervention or prevention even for a child, in terms of we're going to intervene here to prevent this child becoming mentally ill or mentally unstable. It's staggering, isn't it? Not a challenge anywhere. Nobody saying, hang on a second, why don't they just get on with teaching them how to read, write and to spell and to do mathematics and let their parents get on with looking after their emotional well-being? Lunacy. Lunacy. 20 minutes to midday on Sunday the 3rd of December, even. Is it November? December 3rd, 2017. Staggering that. We might pick that up again on the Richie Allen Show later in the week. The Mail on Sunday. We've taken a long time to go through the papers this morning. The Mail on Sunday, the headline is, this is kind of sickening actually, in terms of the two-tier justice system that we live with, like it or lump it. Corbyn Peer and Expenses Scandal. Corbyn Peer and Expenses Scandal. The Mail on Sunday says, Labour's chief whip in the Lords is facing questions over expenses claims. Lord Bassam is quoted as saying he hadn't breached parliamentary rules, but that he will repay £40,900 given to him for commuting costs since 2010. There's much more to this, and it's summed up pretty well by Petrie Hoskin. She's a broadcaster. She was on Sky News today reviewing the papers. Petrie Hoskin on the latest disgusting expenses scandal.
Shocking story, actually, on the front of the Mail this morning. Just when you drill down into the exact amounts that were claimed by this Corbyn peer. Tell us more.
Corbyn peer, Lord Bassam. Listen, the thing with this story is that did they learn nothing from the MP's expenses scandal? And if he's doing it, who else is doing it? I mean, that is for me the question. And basically what he's done, if I can put it in very basic terms, is he gets an overnight allowance either for a second home or for a hotel. So he was charging for that, and he was charging for his travel expenses to go back to Brighton. So he was double bubbling it, basically. One or the other, but not both. And
he's a fucking criminal. That's what he is, and I don't care. That is what he is. It is fraud. It is fraud. In the tens of thousands of pounds.
Both, and he's agreed to pay back the lower sum.
So why has he agreed to pay it back then?
For the train fares and the cab fares. Listen, as we were saying in the green room, if any one of us got caught stealing money or taking money or using money in this way, we would not get the opportunity to say, oh, now you've caught me, I'll pay it back.
No, we wouldn't. We'd go to prison. He's a fucking thief. If I did that. Now, I don't work for anybody. I do not work for anybody. But if I was working for DavidIke.com, or I was working for for a radio station in the city, and I was fraudulently claiming expenses to the tune of tens of thousands of pounds, and it was discovered, it would quite rightly be reported to the police, and I would be arrested. So why isn't this fucker Lord Bassam being arrested? Because we live in a two-tier justice system. One rule for that lot and another for the rest of us.
I mean, this is
and paying back at the lower amount.
And that's paying back the really lower amount. I mean, they are asking £260,000 is the higher amount, by the way, that they want him to pay back. Look, these peers, whoever they are, MPs, this is not their money, it's our money, and how dare they accidentally break the rules. I mean, he's in some cases saying, well, I don't think I've broken any rules. You know, there are no rules broken. I've been told there are no rules
detached
broken.
Detached from reality.
Absolutely.
Detached from reality, that's an understatement. I don't think I've broken any rules. You have. You're a scumbag. Ultimately, there are people, you know, again, it's funny, we're going to keep hearing this term virtue signaller. I'm certainly no virtue signaller. But there are people in dire straits in this country. We know this. Do you know how we know this? Because we hear from them. They contact the programme to tell us that their benefits have been stopped for some spurious reason, or that they can't find accommodation, that they're paying 60% of their salary renting in the south of this country and elsewhere. People are absolutely up against it. Right? And you have bastards like this gaming the system. And then, oh, I'll pay back some of it. No, you should go to jail for it. End of story. Because they'd send me to jail for it. They'd send you to jail for it. So send these bastards to jail for it. Give them a taste of it. But of course they won't. Unbelievable that. 14 minutes to the top of the hour. 14 minutes to midday. Madness. It's just madness. On the education story, and the news that 3,000 therapists are going to go into schools to tackle an epidemic of mental health problems among youngsters. Absolutely Orwellian, this. There's been some very interesting comments. Lance Borkett. Lance is a teacher and he was on the programme, Lance, 10 days or so ago. I did a phone in. Lance came on. It was absolutely outstanding listening to Lance, the honesty of him as a teacher. And Lance says to me on Twitter, I won't be a designated lead. I do not have the skill set or training. We haven't been consulted over this. It's another policy forced on us. I said before, Richie, I'm a social worker now, not a teacher. That's Lance. Thank you, Lance. And Angela Miller-Davis, how you doing, Angela? Richie, the more parents that deregister their children from school find their kids are happier. Funny that. I and many others' experience is the same. Happier kids. That's really interesting, Angela, because when I have interviewed people who homeschool their children, and I have had cause recently to meet with children who have been homeschooled, and I found those children to be very alert, to be very bright, very verbose, very loquacious. No, I mean that. Very, very bright, very chatty children. Very alert, clued in, full of energy. Angela, I agree with that. The more parents that deregister their children from school will find that their kids are happier. Very interesting stuff. Feathers R Us tweets, they could force the children to take antidepressants which cause side effects and turn them into zombies, Richie. Scary stuff. Yeah. I have no doubt. This is what's coming. I mean, we know that ADHD was invented by Big Pharma. In fact, the man whose name escapes me now, I normally recall the name of this man fairly quickly. I can't think of his name. But the guy who came up with ADHD, he admitted in his later years that was a load of bollocks, monumental bollocks. You know, a condition invented by Big Pharma to push billions and billions and billions of pounds worth of drugs on children that probably are doing them unbelievable harm in terms of their later life. Basically, what Big Pharma have done is they have identified natural traits of the human condition and have decided to medicate them. And children not paying attention to a teacher or running around full of energy and not listening to what they're being told because it doesn't make any sense to them, which is totally natural, by the way, they medicated that. And that's what you'll see. There's no doubt if you dig deep into this ridiculous policy, this Orwellian policy, that it will have the fingerprints of the World Health Organization and some of the biggest pharmaceutical companies in the world. No doubt in my mind that it will. Helen Crosby accidentally has made her laugh. Yes, accidentally fiddling my expenses. It was just an accident. Yeah. £250,000 more in my account. It's just an accident. Criminals. 10 minutes to the top of the hour. Let's leave that one and move on. And what are we going to finish with? We're going to Well, look, there's a couple of very we're not going to finish for a few minutes. There's a couple of very interesting articles in the Mail on Sunday, which are articles about subjects that we've talked a lot about lately. Here's the headline for you. We are a label-less household, Pink reveals. Pink reveals she is raising her children gender neutral after her daughter Willow, 6, expressed her desire to marry an African woman. Pink is raising her daughter to be gender neutral, she has revealed. She said she didn't want her daughter to be defined by traditional gender roles. We live in a label-less household, says Pink. This is just absolute crazy shit, this, isn't it? Isn't it? And it's everywhere. Pink said that the daughter told her she wants to marry an African woman when she grows up. That's just a sort of silly, funny thing that a child says, isn't it? Children say funny stuff like that. When I was a teenager, I used to supplement my zero pocket money by babysitting our neighbour's children. Some of them were babies. Some of them were a bit older. Some of them were 6, 7, 8 years old. I loved it. It was a job I loved. I loved minding children. I found it hilarious. I was the worst babysitter that ever lived. There was no discipline with me. There was none of this. You have to be in bed by 9 o'clock on Saturday night. Your parents are out. You have to be in bed. They left strict instructions. I didn't give a shit. They just stayed up with me. And then when the parents were coming in the driveway at 2 o'clock in the morning, they went to bed. they pretended to be in bed. That's the way it was. Honestly, I loved it. And young children say the most bizarre things. They say some hilarious things, right? Hilarious stuff. And the child saying she wants to marry an African woman is no indication that the child is having gender confusion or gender identity issues. It's madness. We'll leave that alone. I wonder why they're not asking people like Pink about future emotional harm. But anyway, Peter Hitchens in the Mail on Sunday. Here's the headline. Our new national curriculum, brainwashing and propaganda. Our education system teaches the young what to think, not how to think. And if you ever wonder why so many things don't work properly anymore, or why you can't get any sense out of so many organisations, this is one of the main reasons. It's also getting harder and harder to think or say certain things. This week, I experienced this mixture of brainwashing and propaganda at two different ends of the system. I was sent a rather sinister questionnaire given to new arrivals at a secondary school I won't name. The questionnaire is part of what has now become PSHCE, Personal, Social, Health and Citizenship Education. Citizenship Education. Jesus, this is really Orwellian. Hitchens writes, it is not anonymous, but it seeks in a slippery sideways manner to discover what the children involved think about immigration. The cleverest question asks 11-year-olds to say what, excuse me, the cleverest question asks 11-year-olds to say why they think there is a shortage of jobs for younger people. One answer on the multiple choice form is competition from international applicants. They are asked to agree or disagree with such statements as, I like to be around people from other countries, and meeting students from other countries is interesting. So 11-year-olds are asked to say, yes, I agree with that, or no, I disagree with that. They are also invited to say how much they agree or disagree with the statement, immigration is bad for the country. These 11-year-olds are asked if they have close friends from different countries and how they would speak to a person whose first language isn't English. they are asked if immigrants should have the same rights as everyone else, whether they should be encouraged to speak the language of this country or encouraged to continue in their own traditions. Well, writes Peter Hitchens in the Mail on Sunday, I agree very strongly with the parent who sent this to me because she thought it was sinister probing into the minds of children and also into her own opinions. None of the business of the school or the state, writes Peter Hitchens. And by Christ, he's right. It's none of school's business or the business of the state what those young children might think about those issues, which they're way too young to understand the complexities of anyway. Hitchens goes on to write, might some little symbol be placed against the name of any pupil who answered in the wrong way? Might it affect that pupil who answered in the wrong way? Might it affect that pupil's future and the attitude of the school towards the parents? If not, what is the educational purpose of this? It's not about education. It's about re-education. It's about brainwashing and programming generations of children to believe that there is only one way to think on complex issues. And the way to think on complex issues is the way we fucking tell you to think. And failing to think the way we tell you to think will have profound consequences for your future, young man, young lady. Madness. This is Owen Jones. You know, the poster boy for this fucking garbage. I'm sorry for swearing on a Sunday. It's garbage. It's garbage. It drives me mad. Who's standing up against this? You know, one woman has written to Peter Hitchens, why aren't the parents pulling their children out of the school? Go on strike, for God's sake. Get together as parents and say they are not going in until this stops. Right. Jesus Christ, does anybody have any balls anymore? You know, does anybody have any ovaries anymore? Stand up to it. Don't put up with it. Say no. No. You're not asking my 11-year-old child those questions. I'm not having it. None of your fucking business what he might think about immigration. Immigration. He's 11. Jesus, I won't talk to him about immigration. I wouldn't dare influence him. Let him think whatever he wants when he gets older. Jesus Christ, I want him or her thinking about football, about the latest film they want to see in the cinema, music. My God. And also, finally today, the papers were full of Donald Trump. Now, I haven't gotten into it because I have nothing new to add to Michael Flynn and his deal with the FBI and Trump colluding with Russia, which of course there's no evidence that he ever did, none whatsoever. I'm not going to get into any of that because it's a waste of time. But the Trump retweeting Britain First is still in the papers. It's all over the papers today as well. But what made me laugh, dear listener, we're going to finish on a bit of a giggle. What made me laugh was there was a hilarious exchange on the Andrew Marr sofa. A hilarious exchange. Nigel Farage was with Kate Andrews. She's an American woman who works for the Institute of Fiscal Studies. So you had Farage, Kate Andrews, the economist, allegedly, and the alleged comedian Aisha Hazarika. All three of them on the sofa. All three of them talking about Trump and Britain's First. Do you want a bit of virtue signalling? Just for the crack. We'll end with a bit of virtue signalling. Well, here it comes. You'll hear this sound whenever we have any overt or outrageous virtue signalling. All right? Okay, let's have the Trump tweets discussion with Kate Andrews, Aisha Hazarika and Nigel Farage. This is going to make you laugh.
Because we've had these, I would say, actually disgraceful tweets from him this week, retweeting Britain First, well, which is a fascist, well, racist organisation.
Was he? He
retweeted Free Britain.
Okay, let's just get Britain this first. Right, shall we? There are 43.6 million people that follow Donald Trump. Donald Trump follows 45 people. One of those is Ann Coulter, right-wing American commentator. Yeah. She retweeted these videos. He picked it up from her and retweeted
He's responsible for his actions.
He wouldn't have an earthly clue who Britain first
but
were.
That doesn't
now,
matter.
Look, were, now, were they in good taste?
Stupid.
Well, he's not that stupid. He's president of the USA.
And he doesn't know what he's retweeting.
Of course he doesn't. Of course he doesn't research everything.
Well, that means
he is stupid. You're dealing with
a
very, very different president here.
I'm asking a slightly different question, if I may. Are they not? Was that not a disgraceful thing to do? Those tweets, were they not themselves disgraceful? They're stirring up hatred between people in this country. They're fake news. They should not have been retweeted by the President of the United States.
Was the story about ISIS throwing people off buildings fake news? No, it wasn't. It was true.
It was true. It happened in Egypt.
Do I think, Andrew, those tweets were in good taste? Not particularly. No, I don't. But the point is, you're going to defend him. The level of outrage from the liberal elite in this country is out of all proportion.
Go on, Nigel.
I can.
And every single time, I haven't finished yet. And the idea that that should lead to half the Labour Party saying he shouldn't be allowed to come to our country, frankly, is ridiculous. And I think his view by the public as being ridiculous.
Aisha,
Donald Trump is a racist, he's misogynistic, and he's Islamophobic. He peddles in stirring up hate and division. Now, that is something that you might agree with, but that is not what British values are in this country. And just remember...
You're out of touch.
As Joe Cox lay there dying...
You're out of touch.
The scumbag who executed her shouted out the words...
I know.
...Britain... First. So the idea
Do you think the president knows who Britain first are?
Marvellous. Right, that's pretty much it for Sunday View this Sunday, the 3rd of December 2017. What's become of our media? Thanks for listening. You and I will do it all again tomorrow at 7 p.m. UK time for Monday's Richie Allen Show in association with davidicke.com. Until then, enjoy the rest of your Sunday. Even what happened there. Enjoy the rest of your Sunday. Stay with davidicke.com and fabradiointernational.com. Until tomorrow, bye now.
Broadcasting the information the mainstream media won't touch. This is the Richie Allen Show in association with davidicke.com.